Dear friends, in this weekly study of Bhagavad Gita, we are presently studying the 10th chapter, which is known or titled as Vibhuti Yoga, means joining with God, our true nature, our true self, through understanding how God manifests in all the different forms that seem to attract us, which seem very real to us, and they attract us, and thus through that attraction they bind us. In the 10th chapter, in the beginning, Lord told that know that all whatever you see around is nothing but the manifestation of God. I alone, he says, I alone manifest as this whole universe in various forms. And because of the ignorance, we see that there is I and the world, and these distinctions, these divisions appear to be real. And then we get attracted or repelled by these different forms in order to fulfill our desires. The desires, they themselves are really a sign, a suggestion. Whether we take it or not is a different thing. But the desire really is the indication that the existence is one without second. There is no I and you. Therefore, when there is I, it is dissatisfied. That I is never satisfied, wants to get things from the universe. Means want to become somehow connected and one with the universe, because that is the reality. In truth, this break, I and world, is not real. And therefore, these desires really indicate that. So, Lord says here that what I do as a matter of compassion, those two beautiful verses we discussed in the last class, that I, as a matter of grace, showering grace on the devotees who want to realize the truth, those who want to come to me wholeheartedly, and therefore they are worshipping me wholeheartedly. What do I do to them? I shower my grace on them in the form of illumination that destroys this darkness of ignorance, and then they can see or experience the truth of the one divine, all-pervading, homogeneous existence. These are just the words, friends, to somehow express the essence, but really it is inexpressible. What happens that when the I is dissolved, well, nobody really can express that in words. Swami Vivekananda, in his beautiful poem on Samadhi, he says how the mind goes on transcending all different forms. And as these forms are transcended, the world starts appearing as non-existent, like a dream. Everything, this one's body, the I and the world, they appear as really an illusion. Then that illusion also is dissolved. And what remains, he said, that cannot be described. only the one who experiences. There is no description possible for that. So, one goes beyond the region of the speech and the mind too. Beyond all limitations, one then realizes the true nature and thus becomes completely filled with the ultimate happiness and peace. It is therefore very important that we pivot our attention to God. And through love, it is devotion means love properly directed. Love directed to names and forms is never going to bring fulfillment in life. Love that transcends names and forms and goes to the essence, that is the love that is called then devotion. It is automatically single-pointed. It automatically will go on increasing because it is for the real substance. The love in the world towards name and form, it keeps on fluctuating all the time. If somebody does something nice to me, I love that person. If that person does something, you know, that is unpleasant to me, I started hating that person. This love and hatred in the world is because we really do not know the true essence of love. God alone is the essence of all love. And so, when the love is directed to that, the lamp of knowledge starts burning in our consciousness, removing this ignorance, and the outcome of ignorance also thereby goes away. When ignorance goes away, the outcome or the result of that ignorance also goes away. If I am seeing that there is the banana and I am hungry, then I go forward to eat it. And as I touch it, I realize, well, it looks like banana, but it is made of wood, just for show. And then what happens? My desire to eat it vanishes. The ignorance was there that, well, that banana is real, it is banana. And then when that ignorance vanishes, the outcome of that ignorance, the desire of that was for that banana, that also goes away. So, when this ignorance that this I is real, this world around me is real, because of this ignorance, I am getting insatiable desires to run after the various objects in this world. It is insatiable because those objects themselves are illusory. And so, that goes on increasing and increasing without ever finding satisfaction. But when this ignorance goes away, now I do not crave for them. I see that all happiness is within me. There is no source of happiness outside anywhere. So this knowledge dawns. Now, this is a matter not just for intellectual understanding. A little intellectual understanding is helpful, but basically, it is not a matter of intellectual understanding at all. You can never understand it because it is beyond this capacity of causation. Understanding means what? If we look at what is the meaning of this word understanding, bringing things in the purview of our mental connections. So we limit something that we understand that gets automatically limited by it. So that which is unlimited cannot be even understood. Understanding is finding some logical connections, and they depend on how our brains are programmed. Our brain programming changes, the idea of understanding also thereby changes. So understanding is a tool, a helpful tool, but it cannot take us too far. Understanding has to give rise to the steps that lead to experience. And here the faculty of intense feeling steps in, that we want to feel the reality. The feeling goes beyond understanding. And Sri Ramakrishna used to say, therefore, devotion goes right into the inner parlor. Intellect stays only in the outer parlor. The devotion can go right into the kitchen, the most inner recess. It becomes more intimate, and therefore this question of feeling now steps in. Also, one needs to see this, because now we are coming to Arjuna's very beautiful question. It is not really a question, it is a request. Arjuna is not saying that I don't understand something, explain it to me, or says that, well, Lord, what you are saying makes no sense. Earlier he has made such statements, but now it is not the question, but a request. That and that request is because of this desire to feel Lord more and more. And thus the whole experience changes. Religion, as Swami Vivekananda used to say very often, religion is realization. It is experiencing the truth. It is not just understanding things like a philosopher in the common sense would understand that, yes, this is logically correct. Not in that sense. It is not giving an intellectual assent to something, but it is change of awareness and consequent change of life too. So as Arjuna is listening to Krishna, what happens when we are listening and to the what the teacher is telling? Then our understanding starts getting changed. Our awareness starts getting changed accordingly. And therefore, now the our desires also undergo transformation. Our seeking of various things in the world stops, and our seeking for more and more truth becomes manifest in our whole experience or all activities in life. Everything gets woven around this main search that I want to experience the truth. Now through that, now Arjuna starts saying, these verses are really beautiful, and only an academic understanding or academic study of Bhagavad Gita will never make a person see the significance of what Arjuna is saying here. Arjuna is a spiritual aspirant. And when we see that, then alone we will be able to see reason behind this entreating Arjuna, that what Arjuna is saying to Krishna now, that please tell me this, that it is, he says there that, look, the verse number 12th, 13th and another two verses after that, he is telling Krishna, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adidevam Ajam Vibhum Ahustvam Rishayas Sarve Devarshir Naradastatha Asito Devalo Vyasah Swayam Chaiva Bravishime. This is amazing, astonishing statements from the mouth of Arjuna. Really astonishing. You are the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Abode, and supremely holy. All sages, the divine sage Narada, as also Asita, Devala, and Vyasa call you the eternal, resplendent being, the primeval deity, the birthless and omnipresent. And you too are telling me so. See, Sri Krishna is a person standing in front of Arjuna. About a person, Arjuna is making these statements, that you are the Supreme Brahman, something that is not seen by everybody. They will see you as a human being like any of us. But here Arjuna says, you are Supreme Brahman. How difficult to grasp this idea. It is because of some knowledge already dawning in him, that although he is my friend, look at this, you know, Arjuna and Krishna, they are almost of the same age and were friends for a long time, have been friends. And not that the friendship breaks, but the friendship now gets on a different dimension. You realize your friend is not just a friend, but is divine, is God. And make God your friend is very beneficial. If you have some big person as your friend, that is great. That friend can help you. But if your friend is God, then how greatly beneficial will it be? And then we can make God our friend. It is only, it depends on us, you know, that to make God our friend, he is our friend. Only we have to realize that. Arjuna sees that what his friend, he was thinking of him as just his friend, is really divine, God. And that we can also become friend to Krishna. That is why we can study and understand and feel this, that yes, Krishna is my friend also. And how is this friend? That Supreme Brahman, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. It is, these words are really very beautiful words, very profound too, in their inner meaning and significance, that you are the all-pervading reality. You are all-pervading reality. See, he is telling to this person, Sri Krishna, he is seeing that, how difficult it is, that you are seeing something limited and yet are seeing the unlimited aspect of it. One comes to see this through the evolution. I was talking to someone, I think this morning or yesterday, that this morning itself, that if you have a photograph of a person, your wife, you will say that, hey, this is my wife. You are actually pointing to what? To a piece of paper. A piece of paper, you say that this is my wife. Now, is that your wife? It is a piece of paper. And yet, yes, it is your wife, because what you are seeing there is not just a piece of paper, but something far more than that. Not only, just look at the emotions that when you would say that here is my wife, everything associated with your wife, with the person, all her qualities, they will start coming in your mind just with that picture. So, it is a piece of paper, but now that piece of paper is something much more, far beyond a piece of paper. Now, when you see the body of your wife, what is it? It is, again, not really your wife. Is these bones and all, it is again an image. It is just an image, instead of being made in paper, it is made in bone, blood, flesh, so forth. And it is a walking image, talking image, and so forth, that's all. It is but an image. Is the person limited only to that? It is not limited to that either. It is much more than that. So, your understanding about something that you see is really a lot. And there is really a lot to it, even much more than your mental image. It is Brahman. Everything is really Brahman. But what is special about Sri Krishna here? It is in Sri Krishna, in that person, that awareness of Brahman is fully manifest. I am Brahman. That is fully manifest. And therefore, that Sri Krishna doesn't consider himself to be limited by any particular limitation of body and so forth. Body or mind or intellect, it uses a particular body, particular mind, particular intellect and so forth. It uses it, but it doesn't get limited by it. This is a very different situation. To use something and to get identified by that are not the same things. To use, say, a pen is very good, but to identify oneself just with the pen isn't good, isn't right either. So, to use the body, very good. But because of ignorance, we get limited by the body. I get identified with it. Do not think or feel the bigger, larger dimension associated with us. So, in Krishna's case, there is no such limitation. And so, he can say, well, everything is contained in me. Look, in the 9th chapter we saw that everything is contained in me, but I am not in anything. I am in everything and yet I am not in anything. It is a great statement. And who can make this statement? The one who is associated or identified with Brahman. I am Brahman. A great statement you read in Vedanta, that I am Brahman. What does it mean? Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. That there is no distinction really between this matter here and matter there. The consciousness is really same in everything. The I here and I there are not different. Commonly we will feel due to ignorance that the I here and the I there are different. But the one who knows sees that it is only the name and the form are different, manifestations are different. Like ocean in one wave is not different from the ocean on another wave. Moreover, these waves, they really don't have any permanent existence. They keep on rising and falling. They are, in that sense, impermanent and therefore unreal. They rise and fall, they continuously change. So similarly, all the names and forms that we see, the human beings, the animals, the houses, everything, it has a birth, everything is coming up, keeps on changing, growing, and at one point it is over, it is gone, it is not seen anymore. So, what remains? The existence remains. That never goes away, it never began, never ends. So, he says, Arjuna says to Krishna, now, you are that. I see that you have that awareness with you. You are that divine. Param Dhamma. Dhamma means home or abode. Supreme abode. What is a home? A home means where we go and we are roaming about, but then when we go home, we feel, peace. Let me take off my coat, let me relax. That is the idea of home. That when you, where you feel that there is nobody to disturb you, now you can do whatever you want. That is what you call home. It is, I can now lie down anywhere, it is my home. My home is a very funny idea, we all have that. But what is this home? Our homes here, they keep on changing. The address that you gave, that, well, I live in this apartment. Now, if you go to work at some other place, you choose another apartment. You have some house, but when you feel that it is not really convenient to you, you change it, you sell, go to some other place. Or even if you are you have a home, you have that house, still you will not always be found in the house. So what is our real home? One may say, well, my body is my real home, then I am always in the body. And can we always be found in the body either? No. It is not even that we are always in the body. First of all, the body also dies, and then that is no more our real home. But even when we are physically alive, are we always in the body? Look, when you are dreaming, are you in that body? Or when you are in deep sleep, are you in that body? You are really not there. In dream, you may be having a handshake with the Queen of England, while your body may be in Providence here. So, it is you are not in the body. Body is therefore not your true home either. And it dies. And no more it is your home. But you can never go out of God. You always will have to stay in God. And therefore that is your real home, supreme home. You cannot go out of it. It is your true home. You are always in God. So God is called Paramdhama, the highest or the supreme abode that you cannot go away from. So now Arjuna is seeing this. This is the result of transformation. The nine chapters have gone by, some verses of 10th chapter also have gone by, and Arjuna was not just a passive hearer and nodder, okay, yes, fine, not like that. He was absorbing, and as the knowledge is getting absorbed, the awareness is getting transformed. So now he is seeing Krishna, not earlier. Earlier he was not saying that to Krishna. For example, in the fourth chapter, in the beginning of fourth chapter, when Krishna tried to tell him something like this, he immediately stopped Krishna, saying that, well, you are born just like me, we are together, so to say, contemporaries. And how you say that you gave knowledge to somebody who was born many, many ages ago? Because Arjuna at that time didn't gauge that greatness, the supreme divine nature of Krishna, which now he is seeing. At least he is getting a glimpse of it. And so he says that this is what I say, and you are supreme purity because you have no desire, and desires make us impure. And so, you do not have anything apart from you, and so you are pure. What is the idea of pure? Like, this is pure water, means it is just water, nothing is added to it. That is the idea of purity, that it is just that. It is pure honey, means there is nothing else added to it, it is just honey. So, Lord is pure because it is pure consciousness. There is nothing apart from it. It is totality. There is nothing else there. There is no duality there. And so, therefore, it is supreme purity. It is, that is the supreme purity, and therefore thinking of that supreme purity brings purity in our lives too. When we think of Lord, to the extent we think of Lord, we think of that supreme purity, and that gets reflected in our life too. So, he says, you are all that. Purusham Shashvatam, you are the being who never undergoes any changes. Shashvata means remain the same. No change occurs there. All changes are happening in the world. They are not touching you. Like a movie, so many actions are going on there in the movie. But the screen is not affected by that. Screen just remains as it is. You can see a lot of bloodshed in the movie, and yet no stain of blood on the screen. Screen remains the same. And yet all the movie is taking place right on the screen. Screen is the reality there. The images come and go. So just think of all these pictures. Movie, you know, things are happening here like a movie, and God is that screen, unchanging, passing through every picture. There is no picture in which the screen is not. The screen is in every picture, and yet it is not in any picture. It is not caught in any picture, and thus, you see that this Lord is and the unchanging aspect. See, in us we see these two. This is one of the ways of trying to feel the truth of Vedanta, to learn to separate the changing and the unchanging. That which is changing in us, like the body, the mind, it keeps on changing. That is just the nature of it, change. And yet we have this idea that something does not change, that remains the same. There is absolutely no change in that. So that is the two things in an ignorant person get confused. And so is not able to see what is changing and what is unchanging. You have the awareness, each of us has the awareness of something that does not change. On the basis of that, in fact, we make commitments. We say, I will do this. Now, if that I is associated just with the body, it keeps on changing continuously. It is on the basis of that you cannot make any commitment, because there is nothing permanent about it. And yet, see our life, it will be just impossible if you are not aware of something that does not change. It is not possible to specify that which does not change. You cannot specify it, but yet each of us is very certainly aware of it. Without that awareness, one cannot say that on such and such date, I will be going to Florida. I have booked my ticket for that. How can we say like that? How can we have that awareness? And that if everything is continuously changing, there is no I that will be going there. It is nothing permanent there. What is permanent? What does not change? That which does not change is God in us. That does not change. Like the screen, it remains. And the movie keeps on changing, comes and goes. In fact, that is why it is called movie. If it doesn't move, it won't get called movie. It is continuous change is the nature of this world. And yet there is something that is permanent, that does not change. Purusham Shashvatam. That is the meaning of this word, Purusha. Purusha means the innermost being. Purishvayanat, that is how the word is understood. It is broken like this, that Purishvayanat is called Purusha, means the one who sleeps inside this city of this body. Body is the city who dwells inside. That dweller is God, and it does not change. It is always there, whether you like it or whether you don't like it. That is there. That is the isness of the existence. So now Arjuna is able to feel that Sri Krishna is the embodiment of that principle. And Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum, that you are the supreme divine, that is beyond time. Time proceeds from you. Time is a product. All other things are in time. But Lord is beyond time. So, it is this about Shri Krishna Arjuna is getting that awareness now. And Vibhum, you are all pervading everywhere. Now, he says, not that I alone say like that. I may not have the knowledge of it. I am no authority on this. I have a glimpse of this and I say, and also I base it on other authorities. My statement is derived from those who are the authorities on this subject, like the sages. They have said so about you. And now here we again see that Arjuna is referring to sages who were much before in the historical context, much before this Sri Krishna, who is Arjuna's friend. All these sages, Asito, Devalo, Vyasaha, they were all before, and they have described you as such. Narada, Devarshi Narada. Narada is describing the glories of Lord and has been given the boon of being immortal. So, he has said this. So, this is a trait in human beings, that we do not know everything, we cannot know everything, our intellect is limited. So, you take certain things on the authority of some others. And you have the conviction that since they are deep into it, they know those things better than I know. So we accept that authority. You go to the doctor and then whatever the doctor tells, you accept it on the authority of that doctor, that that person must have studied it. I don't know. So you go to lawyer and see that, well, many of those aspects, you do not understand them. But then those people who deeply study it, you take the opinion of them and do it. You have engineers, like how the construction is going on there, how much steel is to be put there, where to put, what size, and all that. There are people who work with these, their authorities there, you accept their authority. So there are people who have understood through their life, through their dwelling on these, what is divine manifestation. So they have said that about you, so you accept it. You accept it on their words and then try to feel it more, understand it more and experience it basing on that. So that is called really Shraddha. We had discussed this earlier, that it is the statement of the sages that you take it on their authority. They know it. That scriptures have said like that. They are no, and they are not there to fool you. So you take that on their authority and now try to work on it. Like you take directions from MapQuest or whatever and then follow those. And then by following those directions you reach there. If you just start questioning what is the proof that MapQuest knows it, they must be fooling us, or it might be another plot of some terrorist organization. One can spin lot of ideas like that. But mostly people just take it and drive, and then they come to the place that they, if they properly follow it, they reach the destination. So similarly, you take up these statements as the guidelines for practice. If you are not going to practice, then no point in even studying it. A waste of time. You know, that if we are not going to drive there, just looking at those directions may be an intellectual fun, but not really going to help us to get there. If you don't want to go there, no need to look for directions. So, it is like that, that if we want to realize truth, then that is, these directions are useful. This, what these sages have said, is useful. Take it up and accept it as true, although you are not seeing it. This is a very important trait and a very important requirement of learning, that accept it as a prima facie truth and then try to realize it. Take it up as a possibility. Explore it. If you want to know about it, explore it, realize it, and that is the way to do it. It is therefore this concept of Shraddha, that so many great sages have said, not that those who are not authorities. Sri Ramakrishna said once, there were so many people there that they started calling him incarnation of God. And Sri Ramakrishna said, well, why do you talk like that? Do you know anything about it? So one of you goes to the theater, another is studying in college, another is a schoolmaster. How much do you know about it? On what authority are you telling these things? Before you guys came here, so many these scholars of scriptures and great spiritually elevated people and saints, they have come, seen me, and then they have declared me as the incarnation of God. And you who have no idea, just you are parroting something, what do you know about it? So, somebody who doesn't know anything is declaring something is one thing. You know, that is that can be doubted, that can be questioned. But these are the authorities, they have said that, and so you take it up. And then he said, you yourself are telling me, O Lord, that you are everywhere, you are all pervading, and sarvam etad ritam manye. Now Arjuna says, sarvam etad ritam manye yanmam vadasi keshava nahite bhagavan vyaktim vidur devana danavaha svayamevatmanatmanam vetthatvam purushottama bhutabhavana bhutesha deva deva jagatpate. All this and what else you say unto me, O Keshava, I regard as true. O Lord, verily neither the gods nor the demons know your manifestation. You alone know yourself by yourself. O best of persons, O creator of beings, O Lord of beings, O God of gods, O Lord of the universe. Arjuna is getting overwhelmed with devotion and so is not finding words enough, doesn't think that any expression is good enough. So he is saying, God of gods, you are the creator of the beings, O Lord of the beings, O best of gods, O Lord of the universe. And he says that all this what you have been telling is true. Although I am not perceiving it, yet I am taking it to be true, because now I can feel it, that it should be true. You are telling me, how can it be wrong? You are telling me it has to be true. I remember, one child, and this happens to many children. I have been told by many other mothers also, that when I tell him something, he immediately accepts it, that child. If somebody else tells him, he comes and asks me, Mom, is it right? And when Mom says, yes, yes, that is right, then the child accepts it. Because that is the authority there, that if Mom tells, that must be correct. And so, similarly, you take these things on authority, that Lord, you are telling this, and sarvam etad ritam manye, this is all true. Some time back we were having this discussion in Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna class that Sri Ramakrishna is telling that M, that Mahendranath Gupta, that gentleman there, that you know that this is the visions of gods and all, it is all true. And M says, yes, it is all true. It is, what is this idea, why he is making M accept this? Because that is the way to go ahead, that you take it up and then on the basis of that move forward. If you keep on just getting stuck right there, then you will never be able to advance forward. So it is, this is the nature. Now he says in the next two verses, in fact next three verses, that therefore now I request you that please describe to me in all these different ways that you express yourself in this world. And this is very important for a spiritual aspirant. God is everywhere. The question is, do we feel God? See, the problem with us is that although we want to put our mind to God, it gets scattered into so many places. I sit for meditation, trying to, you know, I make a kind of resolve that I will think of nothing but God. And then after half a minute or sometimes even less, the mind goes to chocolate or whatever. I mean, it is, now this is a tangible, practical problem that although I don't want my mind to wander, it wanders. It is, you cannot quarrel with facts. This is, it should not wander. It should not run about here and there. But it does. Now what can you do about it? So, his request to Lord is very beautiful here. Let me feel the presence of God in all these things where the mind goes. Let me feel your presence there. Let me feel you there. The mind, if it is trying to go to chocolate, let it feel God, not the chocolate. Let me feel God everywhere, wherever the mind is going, because that is the truth. Lord, you have manifested as the whole universe. Now let me feel this. Let me get connected to you rather than these illusory names and forms. Illusory names and forms means we get connected to it and miss the essence. And the example that I had given earlier, you buy a box of cookies and busy yourself just with box and miss the cookies. Why did you then go and buy the box? You bought the cookies. You miss the cookies if you are just looking at the box. So, to make us understand this, Arjuna, as a representative of all of us, is making this tremendous request that, Lord, please tell me that how, as my mind wanders about, how you are manifest in all those, so that they, instead of going to those names and forms, it will go to you, O Lord. This is a great handling of human psychology, that you have to, you know, take a path that is psychologically suitable, and that will yield the proper change in our life. Otherwise, it will not. So, a path that is conducive. It is a fact that, well, if our mind is not going in various directions, If our mind is just getting fixed on God, we don't need to read this chapter. This chapter is not for those great sages who anyway are tuned to God in everything. Their mind is not wandering here and there. It gets fixed on God. They don't need to study this chapter at all. It is for people like Arjuna, who is very much like us. The mind runs about here, there, everywhere. And so we have this problem. And the answer is in these verses that will be following Arjuna's request. So we shall try to study it as we proceed further. Any questions? Okay, so first Ram, you ask your question.
Whatever there is endowed with extraordinary quality, attractiveness and vigor, all that to be born a fragment of my power. So, Kushin, so what should be the upward in other places? She Krishna has explained that other things, all the evil and all the tamas and all that is also born of God. So, devotees, attitude, devotee is supposed to meditate on the glorious qualities of the Lord. So, what should be his or her attitude towards all these bad things? Especially, could you explain it in the context of Swami's poem, Kali the Mother?
See, I understand your question. It is, why Lord is specifically telling about all the magnificent, glorious, great things and try telling Arjuna to see me in this? The answer is in the request of Arjuna himself. Arjuna is telling, well, my mind goes to these things. Where does our mind naturally go? To all those very famous, glorious, big things, you know, they come in the newspapers, our eyes start, you know, this is the big celebrity, this is the President of United States, here is the greatest zoo in the world, the biggest mountain, the biggest river, the glorious and big things, they attract human mind. And by that attraction, they bind the human mind. And therefore, although Lord is in everything, and therefore, while telling this, Lord from time to time repeats, right in this chapter here itself, that I am in everything. There is no really end to my manifestations. But I am telling you all the important things where the mind naturally goes. So, the mind goes to these glorious things. That great big baseball player, and you keep on thinking, the mind keeps on thinking, how many home runs did he get, and so forth. The mind not only keeps on thinking, those lovers of that game, they will keep on, you know, talking about it, keep on thinking about it, even extrapolating it in future, in past, in various ways, the mind will be hovering around that. So wherever mind constitutionally hovers more, Lord says, instead of that particular player, feel that that is not his glory. It is Lord that is there. Keep the mind to Lord there. So that is, this is a question of technique. This Vibhuti Yoga, as like all other yogas, it is a question of applying a technique to turn the mind to God. It is not making a statement of principle here, but it is a statement of technique, that this technique will make you put your mind in God, because it goes to the big, great, glorious things automatically. So instead of feeling that as glorious, feel that it is the glory of God. I am there. I am the glory of that. So instead of thinking, hey, this is the greatest singer, well, that is the greatest singer, God is the real singer there, not that particular person. Let the mind not go to those particular things and go to God. That is the idea here. So that is why it is told in this way. It is in particular context we have to say these things. When Kali, the mother, God is in everything, the context is different. Mind shudders away from that which is horrible, and then tries to feel that it is a creation of some demon. So not to make us feel that, Swamiji makes that poem very specific there, that also is the manifestation of God. Mother Kali is all that is terrible. So don't run away from terrible, but see that terrible as God. So that is the context there. Here the context is about vibhutis, which one makes feel as the glory. Glory of our world, how nice, how big, how wonderful. Himalayas, in fact that is one of the vibhutis here. Himalayas, so glorious, beautiful. Well, it is not beauty of Himalaya. I am there. It is my beauty that expresses there. So feel everywhere God. This is a technique that is shown here. Yes, Charles?
I didn't understand the point you were making when you said Sri Ramakrishna said his disciples didn't have the authority to call him an incarnation. Was he saying they shouldn't do that? Or that he should rely on the authority, they should rely on the authority of the sages?
Yeah, that is what he was telling, that they should understand it more. They should try to, you know, feel that it is, they are not really at a stage where they can know it. So that is what he pointed out there. It is, and also the second part of his statement, that they cannot make me any greater by saying this. One idea behind those people who were saying that, some of them with the idea that they will be able to glorify Sri Ramakrishna by that. But he said, what glorification it is, who are you to glorify me? So, that was the idea in that. Yeah.
So then we should have faith in the authority of sages.
That is true. They yes. Yes, you were saying something, George?
No, I'm still stuck on that. Is
it? It is a business, okay. Make it your business, you know, and that's good enough. You have the meditation like that, I am divine, that will be great. Yes, yes. Yes, but they have many other gut feelings. The problem is that, you know. So it is therefore this illumination becomes necessary.
What becomes necessary?
This illumination therefore becomes necessary that I am.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it isn't necessary. You are already there.
That is, you are already there. Yeah, if everybody is everybody doesn't know that, that is the question, that's all. Yeah, this is the process of knowing it, you see. Whatever that is true, it doesn't make a difference of what label you put on yourself. Yeah.
In other words, is it wrong to meditate on the I Am within you all the time?
It is not wrong. Who says it is wrong? It is good. No, don't say only way. It is there you make a big mistake. Yeah, don't say the only way. It is one of the ways. Yeah. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarayi Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinisrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantrah Tasya Namaniyane Karmapyekam tasya devasya seva Shri Krishna arpanamastu.